What are your competitive advantages and how can you take advantage of that? Maybe you have a lot of cash available and so you partner with somebody who's got the time and the energy to be the boots on the ground, to be making all those outbound efforts, the marketing and the offers, right? So maybe you contribute cash, or maybe you're the person that should be doing the calls because you just have that great salesmanship and are extremely extroverted, right?
What's going on, everybody? This is the Passive Wealth Strategy Show, the show that will teach you how to build wealth with real estate without buying yourself another job. As always, I am your host, Taylor Loat. I'm a real estate investor and I focus on multifamily and self-storage investing. Today, we are joined by Stephanie Cabral. She has built a portfolio of over $3 million, which started as an accidental investment while working as an underemployed attorney. Today, we're going to dig into her journey of building her real estate portfolio, building her path to financial freedom through BRRRR investing and other strategies that she's used to build her real estate portfolio without bringing on partners. Stephanie, thank you for joining us today. Could you tell us a little bit? It's really interesting where you're calling from today. You're on a long-term vacation, if you will, from your home state,
yeah,
Connecticut. Tell us
absolutely
about that.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me. So I live in Connecticut. All my portfolio is based in Connecticut as well, but I am currently in Savannah, Georgia. So I got here about a month ago and I'm here for the next 2.5 months. So I'm wintering in Savannah, which has been a lifelong dream to just not have the Connecticut winters. And we were talking before the show and I mentioned that in the past, I've been spending a month or up to 2 months in the Caribbean, but this was really the first time to take that full winter and just get out and be in a place where the birds are chirping all winter long. And I went outside in just the sweater today and it was sunny and warm. It was really lovely. I self-manage my portfolio, but really have put the systems in place that allow me to handle that management remotely and through the use of virtual assistants and automation and delegation. So right now I do have a tenant turn that's happening. I just got a maintenance request, but the team is handling it and I'm able to just enjoy meeting you, getting to know you, being on the podcast and working on the passion projects rather than on the rental portfolio.
That's awesome. So about that rental portfolio, I have the numbers that I have are that you have 19 units, including 4 furnished rentals. Is that current and up to date?
That's
what you currently
that's
have.
Correct.
Great. So at what point, when were you able to basically stop being an attorney? What was that kind of critical mass of your portfolio?
I think I probably jumped the gun a little early, to be honest. I think I knew that my time as an attorney had run its course. I never really wanted to be an attorney. I practiced for about 10 years, but for about 5 of those 10 years, I was transitioning into something else. So I had started to buy rentals and building the portfolio. I had also taken on the job of being a commercial real estate agent to supplement my income to support buying some of these properties. So I'm doing this transition. And about 4 years ago, actually just over 4 years, I was just done. I was just done. And I wouldn't say that the portfolio was ready to support me at that time, but I was also, you know, I was working as an agent. I knew that there'd be some income from that. I occasionally flip properties. So there's a cash injection. It's just lumpy. It's not predictable. So there was definitely a little bit of faith on taking that leap and getting out of the security of the W-2. But I think for me, because in that situation, I really didn't love my job. And I was underemployed. So from the very beginning, we had this arrangement where I was going to have flexibility. I was going to have less hours, but I was going to be paid on a part-time basis. So I didn't have the golden handcuffs that so many people have. So this transition was something that I knew I was ready and I didn't have that anchor keeping me in place. I think the biggest thing was I'm just not sure that I'm going to be able to jump out. But because I had the other streams of income, not necessarily predictable, but knowing that I could land on something, I made that transition. And then actually if memory serves, within the first 6 months, I doubled my portfolio by buying 2 deals within a 30-day period. And that along with COVID and raising rents and repositioning my portfolio, being able to refinance when rates were really low. So basically, I pulled out a ton of cash and didn't change my cash flow at all, was able to buy those other properties. That then stabilized me, and it was something that turned out to be a great decision. But there was definitely a period of time where I just wasn't sure how that transition out of being a lawyer was going
to
go.
Wow. So let's talk about the strategy that you used to build up that initial portfolio and what enabled you to amass that number of units and that amount of cash flow that got you close to being out. So I understand you used the BRRRR strategy, buy, rehab, renovate, buy, rehab, rent, refinance, repeat. I'm not a BRRRR guy, but
you're missing out on the good stuff.
So let's walk through that. And I think for a lot of BRRRR investors, those first maybe couple of deals tend to be a little bit sticky, just getting the mechanics down. Was that your experience? Walk us through that process.
Yeah. So my first deal, like I mentioned, was an accidental investment. I did not BRRRR that. That was a 203K loan, which is a renovation plus purchase loan for owner occupants and FHA product. So I was able to get construction experience in my very first deal, but basically on training wheels, because the bank gives you a construction manager, like a supervisor who makes sure the work is done, the scope of work is written correctly. So really easy process. I'm gonna call that easy. It was a pain in the butt, but it was really as risk-free as construction can be, right? And then I did actually refinance that pretty quickly, which showed me that this could be done. And once the renovate, so I didn't BRRRR this, I didn't take cash out of this, but it was, again, like a training wheel transaction. So once the renovations were done, I saw how much the property had appreciated. I refinanced, not knowing that cash out was even an option at the time. And so when I was ready to do my first BRRRR deal, I had gone through all of the steps and seen that when you do a renovation, it's not a dollar for dollar expense and appreciation, right? You can put 30 grand in and get 70 grand of appreciation. So that was something that I didn't understand when I was first going through my first deal. So that I think is super, super important to recognize that it's not dollar for dollar an expense and appreciation. And when I started to buy more deals, I had saved up a little bit of capital from the commercial real estate work that I was doing. And so I was able to put money in, do the typical steps. I hired the contractor, did the work. I actually did some of the work myself. And I will say, I decided to never do that again when I was sitting in a bathroom with a pile of tiles sitting next to me and a book open that was called Tile 101. I was like, never again. Nobody's going to wait on my skill or schedule. I slowed the whole thing up. So that was also a really good learning lesson. And then I just learned, okay, so I need to hire the contractors. They're going to get me quotes. And I was starting to pick up some momentum. I was buying maybe one or two a year. I was starting to develop a relationship with the hard money lender, which gave me preferred status in actually some of the buying transactions because they knew that the lender I was using could close. And they were really, there were some that were 7-day closings. And my lender and I just had such a great relationship that they pulled it off for me. So that was really helpful. But, you know, the mechanics of the BRRRR, I think, are so easy once you've done it, but they're mind-blowing if you've never done it, right? The idea that you could actually pull out cash afterwards, and I've pulled out 20 grand, right? As good as some low-level flips, I've been able to pull that cash out and keep the property, right? I think it's an amazing tool to use, and I was lucky to be able to do that. And basically, every deal that I've done has been some form of refinance, equity recapture, and then I typically like to 10x those deals by adding something else, whether that's using private money or hard money. I've done reverse 1031s. I've done the 203K was great because I didn't come out of pocket for those rehab costs, and historic preservation tax credits too. So I like to couple financial strategies together, but the BRRRR is the base model that I've used for every transaction.
Nice. So a lot of creativity in there. Going back to the put in 30K to maybe force a value add of 70K or what have you. Now that depends on a lot of factors. I think sometimes folks, when they're doing rehab, especially their first one, have a temptation to over rehab or to not rehab the right things. So when it comes to, just to go with that 30K example, spending that 30K in the right place on the right things, how do you approach that problem to make sure you're really getting the, you know, value for your money?
Yeah, I mean, you start with what are the selling features of the property, right? Kitchen and bathroom. I think those are the big ones. You want to make sure there's no like massive deferred maintenance. That's going to be a really big red flag for appraisers. But you really want to focus on what the appraiser would be valuing the property. So they're going to look at comparables, comparable sales. And so you're going to want to make sure that the condition is similar to the properties that are selling in the price range that you're looking for. I think a lot of times you really hit the nail right on the head that investors can over improve. So what I like to do is look at how can I repair or upgrade rather than replace. So is that painting cabinets and changing out hardware, or even just refacing and changing out the doors and painting the boxes? That's something that can give you a completely new look without ripping out the existing cabinets. So you're not paying as much for material and you're certainly not paying as much for labor. Same thing with bathrooms. You can glaze tile rather than ripping it out. And I think honestly, even just going through and replacing lighting and hardware, those little finishes, the doorknobs, the outlets, and their switches and their covers, you can really make a property look updated by focusing on those superficial touches. And then there's no better bang for your buck than paint and carpet, right? Or refinishing hardwood floors to go from rip up the carpet, refinish what's underneath. You've got a beautiful, shiny, glossy, natural wood finish. An amazing bang for your buck on that too.
Where do you stand on LVP?
I use it. I've liked it. I think it's got really good longevity. I think the important decision is what level property are you putting it in? So I'm probably not going to put it in an A-class property unless I am doing a really top tier. Like if I'm doing a beach house that's going to get a ton of wear and tear, I might put it in rather than hardwood floors. But a lot of my properties, they're B-class and LVP is perfectly fine. Although I will say I did a duplex side by side. The units were identical and one of the units had hardwood floor and the other we put LVP in. And I will tell you that we got probably $50 to $75 more on the hardwood floor side, and it rented a lot faster. So there's some quantifiable metrics that you can use, right? Like I got $50 to $75 more per door. But also how do you approach the unquantifiable metrics? Like we rented it faster and we got a better tenant and they were clamoring for it. And so we got our choice of the best tenant, right? So I do think that putting in quality products that people are going to want and not be able to destroy is really helpful.
Okay. Yeah, that makes sense. This show, we're about building wealth with real estate without buying yourself another job. A lot of folks are afraid to get into real estate because they've heard all the horror stories about nightmare tenants, and that one property just was a big nightmare. And there are a lot of ways to invest in real estate without buying yourself another job. There's passive investing, and then there's building a business or building systems like you have. You mentioned a bit earlier about your teams of VAs and systems and things like that. Can you walk us through that kind of evolution, what your teams look like today and how they enable you to have this location and time freedom to spend some time with us?
Yeah. When I first started, I was doing absolutely everything and I wasn't putting templates into place. I didn't have any checklists. And so every single time I did something, I was learning from scratch. And when you don't have, you know, I'd have a tenant turn every 3 years and I'd have to figure out what my best practice was again. So that was really frustrating. And especially during that time frame where I was working at the law firm and as the agent and starting to build the portfolio and managing all of the rehabs, it really was getting to be too much. So at that point, I was like, okay, I need to focus on not having all of my time occupied in any one category, right? So that's when I really started to say, I think I dabbled with just getting a virtual assistant to put my water bills into the rent collection platform. So for single family homes, my tenants pay their own water bill. Here in Connecticut, I don't know if this is countrywide, but here in Connecticut, we cannot take the water bills out of the owner's names, right? They have to stay in the owner's names. What we do is we pay the water bill and then we get reimbursed from the tenant in a RUBS program. So I have an exceptionally high standard for service, but an exceptionally low tolerance for repetitious behavior. And so trying to go in every single month and add the water bills, even when it was only four, I was the worst property manager because I wouldn't do it. I didn't like it. So I hired an assistant and that was her only job. Once a month, she checked in, she added the water bills. And I was like, this is great. It's happening. I don't need to, you know, I had to supervise at the beginning, making sure she knew like what number to pull and matching up the property, you know, the logistics of it. Once she got it, I didn't have to look at it again. And I don't think I've looked at the water bills for the past 10 years. And so that really was a game changer for me of like, okay, if she's doing that, can I have other things? So I started to add the tasks and play around with what I can give a virtual assistant, what I can't. And I got to the point that I was able to hire a dedicated virtual assistant. She's been with me about 4 years. She's 20 hours a week and she does bookkeeping for me. She does all of my leasing. She's placed my last, I'd say, 8 out of 11 midterm tenants. And when you've got 4 midterm rentals, the turnovers are happening pretty frequently. And she is handling all of that through our systems and processes. So if I didn't have the checklists, the templates, the SOP, the standard operating procedure. Oh my gosh, that is the Bible in our company, right? Is everything is documented. We've got video screenshots and instructions and everything that you could do to make it foolproof. That is how I've been able to really transition a lot of my administrative work to virtual assistants. So she handles basically all of my admin, my bookkeeping, leasing, tenant interfacing when they have questions, want to know things about the lease. So that was great. But then I got to the point that I'd go on vacations to the Caribbean, right? And I didn't want to be on vacation being responsible for maintenance requests. Also, the international thing and the pina colada thing was really getting in the way of handling these requests. So I followed the obstacle is the way concept, right? So I was like, this is just not working for me. How can I fix it? And I found a company that does third-party maintenance coordination. So it's a virtual assistant company in the Philippines, and they handle all your inbound maintenance requests, 24/7 coverage. They do diagnostics, damage mitigation, and then they determine which type of vendor needs to go out and they dispatch your preferred vendor. So once I took them on, I was able to say, okay, now I'm not even responding to maintenance requests. This is great, right? So everything is just building. And then whenever a new piece that requires my attention or another thing that's frustrating comes to the surface, I really target that and say, I need to focus on outsourcing or delegating that piece. And that's allowed me to have those systems and processes and checklists. And also, I think tips, tricks, and hacks make all the difference in running a really smooth ship. I'll give you one of my favorites that has allowed me to still have really great service, but by doing it remotely. So for our tenant turns, I'm the face of the company, right? I think that serves me very well with my tenants. They see somebody that's professional, they see somebody local, they see somebody that's going to care, but also that's strict, right? So I'm getting exactly the message that I want. I'm not necessarily going to do open houses, but I still want them to know that they're dealing with me. So we'll have a third party, either a tenant that's in the building or the current tenant if they're vacating, or we'll hire somebody, a handyman or somebody, to open the door. So we have a third party have the open houses. I send out through my virtual assistant a pre-recorded video of me saying, I can't make the open house. Don't worry, it's still happening. And, you know, here's a few things that you should know about us. So renting from us builds your credit. We're local landlords, 24/7 maintenance coordination team, and we hold holiday raffles, right? We're really putting our best foot out there. And we say, don't worry, we'll get a chance to meet when you apply. So at the open house, there's a flyer with a QR code for the application. So I'm not a part of any of this. The open house has been scheduled. Somebody else is holding it. Somebody else, my virtual assistant, is sending out my like hello introduction. That now these tenants or these leads have the application form. And when they apply and we run their criteria and they're a fit, we do a Zoom call. That's when I get involved, right? So my virtual assistant's running their background, their credit. She's got the criteria of what would pass, what wouldn't. I have eyes on it to double check that. But once something passes, that's when we meet. And I say, we're going to do a Zoom call so we actually get to meet each other. I need you to take the call from your house because that's where the internet is best. I don't want to get cut off or have a difficult time connecting. And in that moment, when we're on the Zoom call, I ask them to show me around their house. I say, I have to do a video. I have to do a walkthrough anyways. This would save me a ton of time. And so I get to see how they live. This has saved me so much money in turnover costs. And it is all done remotely. And I'm only involved for a 10-minute call once the applications are in, right? So by having these processes that are refined and tweak to optimize the rapport, the process, but minimize the amount of time, that's how I've been able to really run a tight ship by being in the Caribbean or by being in Georgia or being wherever I am, right?
That's great. That's great. And I appreciate all the detail that you
provide. Sorry about that. I know it's a little long-winded, but there skip a step.
No, I love that. Perfect. Great examples. For someone out there, if they wanted to follow in your footsteps, particularly considering where pricing and interest rates are today with the BRRRR strategy, that complicates things a bit. Someone wanted to follow in your footsteps and achieve that time and location freedom as you have. Let's say Stephanie was starting all over again from square one here in 2024. What direction would you go? Where would you get started? Again, considering where prices and interest rates and everything are.
Ooh, okay. If I was going to follow in my footsteps and try to build a portfolio of self-owned properties, and I also like to self-manage because I think you get better tenant quality. I think you're able to keep more cash flow, which helps along the way. It helps to expedite your process. How do you build a self-owned and self-operated portfolio? And I think the big thing is you need to be putting offers out there, right? And that's not necessarily on market properties, but if it is, you just need to be running a numbers game. So you need to be doing as much outbound analysis, communication, contact. So putting all your effort into analyzing deals, making those contacts, because the more no's you get, the closer you are to a yes. So I would start there. And also, I would really take an inventory of what are your competitive advantages. So for me, I'm very resourceful. That is something that has served me really well. And actually, one of my competitive advantages at the beginning was that I didn't have the finances, the cash available to buy the single family home that I wanted, right? If I did, I probably never would have gotten into a duplex. I probably would have just bought a great big house, right? So my situation, which was terrible at the time, is now one of the best things that have served me because I got into real estate because I was an accidental investor. So what are your competitive advantages and how can you take advantage of that? Maybe you have a lot of cash available and so you partner with somebody who's got the time and the energy to be the boots on the ground, to be making all those outbound efforts, the marketing and the offers, right? So maybe you contribute cash, or maybe you are, you're the person that should be doing the calls because you just have that great salesmanship and are extremely extroverted, right? Maybe that's your role. The other option, if you are looking to build extremely passive income, is investing in syndications or something like that, that would allow you to put your money in someone else's deals. I think that's a strategy that a lot of people use. I prefer the returns on my own deals. I'm an aggressive wealth creator, but if you're looking at wealth preservation, that's a great way to do that. So there's a bunch of strategies, but I think it really depends on like where are you starting with your finances, time, and resources.
Love that. Right now, we're going to take a quick break for our sponsor.
Are you looking for a way to easily track your rental property finances? Check out Stessa. Stessa makes managing real estate investments simple. You can easily keep track of the performance, finances, and the paper trail of your rental properties. Our listeners can get started for free and then upgrade at any time to unlock their more advanced tools. And the even better news is that the upgrade is very affordable and will not break your bank. Smart investors know that tracking the numbers, tracking the money, tracking the finances is what really drives your success. Check out Stessa. It'll make your property finances easier. Just go to escapingwallstreet.com, scroll down to the Stessa logo, and get started for free. Now back to the show.
All right, I've got three questions I ask every guest on the show. Are you ready?
Yeah.
Number one, what's your number one book recommendation?
I always go with The E-Myth by Michael Gerber. I read that when I was just getting started and just struggling with all the things. My to-do list was the length of a CVS receipt, so I needed some real help. And he was the one that talked about systems. And he just has so many good quotes where I think my favorite right now is, I'm going to butcher it. So sorry, Michael, don't hold it against me. But basically, if you start a business that depends entirely on you, you didn't buy a business, you bought a job, right? So really focusing, you might be a business owner, but you really need to get out of that daily grind. And so that inspiration was something I got very early on in my investing career. And I'm very grateful to that. So I plug him whenever I can.
Great, great call. Question number two, who or what inspires you?
Who or like, where am I when I feel inspired or what's...
I'll give you that. Where do you source inspiration?
Okay. So I tend to feel very inspired at networking events, hearing what other people are doing. And we talked about how there's so many ways to make money and just seeing the niches and seeing how much effort is getting put out there, how much success people are having. I actually host a meetup in Connecticut, and there's a bunch of us that kind of started this meetup at the same time. And to see where we've come over the past couple of years has been amazing. And I think that energy is really drawing and accumulating. So I think that's where I feel the most inspired. Or also, honestly, with a great podcast, somebody that's relatable and telling you something that you needed to hear, but you just weren't in a place to hear it except for right now, something like that.
Nice. Question number three, think about Stephanie at 80 years old. If you could speak with 80-year-old Stephanie, what advice, feedback, or guidance do you think 80-year-old Stephanie would give Stephanie of today?
I think the first thing she would say is less scrolling, Stephanie, less scrolling. The second thing that I think she'd say is probably more networking, more intentional connection, more investment in self, probably more emphasis on the who, not how.
I appreciate all of those. The scrolling thing is big. I think it's difficult to get away from that and a lot of other great nuggets there. And Stephanie, I want to thank you for joining us today and sharing your journey, all this knowledge and your systems and so much more with us. If folks want to get in touch or track you down, where can they find you?
Yeah, so you can find me on Facebook at Lean Landlord, Instagram at Lean Landlord. My personal Facebook is Stephanie Cabral 33, I think. I'm not great about accepting friends there, so definitely follow me at The Lean Landlord, and that's where I teach others how to implement the same tips, tricks, hacks, systems and processes, documents and checklists too. So if that's interesting to you, you can find me there.
Great. Thank you once again for joining us today. To everybody out there, thank you for tuning in. If you're enjoying the show, please take a moment and leave us a rating and review on Apple Podcasts. I appreciate that so much. I see your reviews and comments, and it gives me a nice little warm and fuzzy feeling every single time. Don't forget to subscribe and catch us here every weekday. Right now, I hope you have a great rest of your day, and we'll talk to you on the next one. Great. Well, thank you once again for joining us today. To everybody out there, thank you for tuning in. If you're enjoying the show, please take a moment and leave us a rating and review on Apple Podcasts. Don't forget to subscribe and catch us here every weekday. Right now, I hope you have a great rest of your day, and we'll talk to you on the next one.